Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Speak Up, Raising the Voices of Women. This program was designed to educate, mentor, and inspire the women of especially District 46 to help them be supported as they work their way towards competing in the international contest in 2017. With me tonight are Angela Edwards, Marquesa Petway, and Kathy Armias. Let me tell you a little bit about Angela. Angela is the Chief Project Management Geek and founder of Castle Thunder Consulting. With 20 years of experience of managing difficult and impossible projects, Angela can show business owners how to bring organization to chaotic processes, projects, and environments. She says project management isn't just a profession, it's a mindset that can be applied to help anyone identify, understand, and address key tasks in a methodical and practical manner. She is a member of the National Speakers Association and a DTM Toastmaster. Marquesa Petway is a business reinvention expert, professional speaker, author of the Reinvention Roadmap, and the founder and chief coach of the National Center for Speaker Training. Ms. Petway is a columnist for Speaker Magazine and was featured in Toastmasters Magazine in August 2015. She serves as a live broadcasting host for Women Speakers Association and is a syndicated columnist for TV. Marquesa is also a DTM and a CSP, a Certified Speaking Professional. And last is Kathy Armias. Kathy is a past district governor of District 7. She is an international speaker, marketing expert, and TED Talk trainer, who wrote an award-winning book, The Unbreakable Rules of Marketing, on how good business and marketing is all about getting people to love you. Kathy is also the creator of the program How to Rock a TED Talk and trains speakers all over the world on how to rock their presentations. For those of you that had just come on the line, I'm going to mute you, and if you haven't already, and I welcome you to Ana Avias and some of our people from across the country.
The next stop is...
Oh, someone's on the... We've got the subway with us. Is that Anna? I'll mute Anna. Okay, Anna, love you, girl. So welcome, everyone. It's great to see you all. And we'll begin first by just having each of them... So as I mentioned, all three women with us tonight are DTMs, and I appreciate them helping me out on this high-performance leadership program. And we have two CSPs. Is that correct? Yes, two CSPs. Marquesa and... me and Kathy and Angela almost there, and the CSP is a certified speaking professional. Okay, so let's begin. When I started this program, this project of the high performance leadership, one of the things that we were working on or that I wanted to see was that more women would be available and be ready to go and enter the international speech contest and actually get up on the stage and compete. So we went to convention, to the international convention, and lo and behold, 5 out of the 10 contestants were actually women, which was very refreshing to see. But as we just put together before we all got together on this call, Kathy helped me identify that there's only been 4 women in all the years of Toastmasters that have won the international speech contest. One was in 1977, 1985, 1986, and the most recent was 2008. So ladies, we have a lot of work ahead of us. So let's begin. Kathy, what do you think has changed to make this happen? And when I say make this happen, meaning why do you think this year we finally saw at least 50% of the women, 50% of the contestants were women?
You know, it's really hard to say. It's just in the last couple of years, I think there has been, I think a lot of districts have been really pushing to have more women compete. If you look at the whole Toastmasters as a whole, just globally, you've got a lot of different areas and different countries where it's not common for women to compete, or it's not common for that's just not a standard thing for women to do. But I think that there's been this encouragement throughout Toastmasters, and I think that's what caused that to happen this year in particular.
Angela, you have any thoughts on it? I know you were there and got to see the contest as well. Any thoughts on why all of a sudden we've got the, not all of a sudden, but we saw 50% this year?
I think that there's a lot of reasons for that, and
in the past year or so, it's kind of flipped my view of things in Toastmasters. I've been fortunate to be in clubs that were tended to be about a 50-50 mix, or maybe were a little few more women in the club than men. And so switching clubs this year, or actually last year, I ended up in a club where there's more men than women. And it was a different perspective to watch the speaking styles. And what I think about that is I think that the numbers are growing. I was in a unique situation having been in a couple of clubs like that. But I think the numbers are growing, the word's getting out, and women are really taking more of action on their performance plans in the workplace and figuring out how to get those valuable leadership skills, which includes speaking and seeking out Toastmasters. And I think that's something that we'll see a lot more of.
Mm-hmm. Great. Marquesa, what do you think, though, is still holding women back from competing?
Well, I'm thinking, and it's relative to the professional speaking industry, I think that there's a perception sometimes, because I think about the evaluators that move folks up, and you have all different types of folks evaluating. Sometimes the perception is, oh, the guy, he really rocked us. The woman, she was okay, but the guy rocked us. And I think it needs to shift in our mind that we need to appreciate all types of speaking. So do I think we as women need to step up and also decide, hey, I can knock this out, a man can knock it out? Yes. But it's interesting when you gave the numbers at the top of the call, how many in Toastmasters world, how many women are not the winners, and then how many women are not known when it comes to even in the professional speaking arena. So I think it's a bias that a lot of folks have, and I think in time that shift will come, and I'm glad you're doing something about it.
Well, thanks. Kathy, do you have any thoughts on what might still be holding women back?
Yeah, I mean, we have this kind of notion out there that when women are bold, we're bitchy. You know, when we act bold, people, I know, I said the B word, right? But when a man does it, it's like, I don't know. I know that the women on this call are probably the same, and that's why we do what we do. But, you know, you have to be that kind of woman that says, you know, I'm going to be so good at what I do that it's not going to matter what my gender is. It's not going to matter what my socioeconomic status is. I mean, you just have to be, when you decide you're going to do something, you have to be so good. And I think just naturally taking women are naturally more nurturing and more emotional than men. Men are just like, they're pretty much like, when they want to do something, they have more of that logistical standpoint of like, I'm just going to do whatever it takes. So I just feel like I feel like that's going on. But, you know, I think the women, if you look at the type of women that will step up, they will be the ones that aren't afraid to be a little bit bold, no matter what they're called.
Yeah, well, Angela, you mentioned being in a club, too, that was mostly men. How do you think evaluations can differ? Because Marquesa mentioned just a little bit about evaluations. Getting an evaluation from a man, I personally find, and I'm going to say a little bit of sexual bias here, it can be very strong from a guy versus a woman who may, I'm being very, you know, blanket here. But what was your experience maybe getting some of the feedback from evaluations from the men in the club? Did it differ?
I think some of the men tend to be more direct, and because they see this as they have a goal to give an evaluation and they want to make sure they give the best evaluation they can. So they want to include everything in there, and they're not so much thinking, I think when a woman gives an evaluation, she wants to think about, well, how can I encourage them and support them? I think men, that's sort of a secondary thing. And again, there are exceptions to every rule. So, but I do feel that the types of evaluations I've received have a little bit of difference based on that. And I found that I think that the evaluations that I've gotten from my new club have been much more technical in nature. Whereas the evaluations that I received in some of my previous clubs were really more about not the technical skills, but kind of the soft skills. And I think having that balance is a really nice thing. to have where you're really growing that and you're really making connection versus really structuring your content and sort of following the rules. But it's there's definitely a difference I've noticed.
Yeah. Well, let me put this out to the three of you. Who, in order for District 46 to realize more women on the stage, for example, I got this project started when I saw Penelope, who's with us, at our district conference. She was one of eight, right? So she was the only female on stage with seven other men. Do I have that correct, Penelope? You were one of eight? Yeah. And that was when this idea came to me, like, oh my goodness, like, what's wrong with this picture? We need to balance it out a little. I put this to all three of you. Who do we need to champion women? Men, women, or both?
I think we need to champion both. I think do it in different ways. I don't know if Kathy said it or Angela said it, about if a woman is bold and different and just out there, she's perceived as, arrogant and, you know, the B word, and she's feeling herself. But if a guy does the exact same thing, there's a different reception. And I think we need to change that context. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to be up there and have a diverse amount of people, personalities, speaking styles. So I think it maybe starts at the club level, to say, hey, we want to get a woman up there. And I do think it would be great for different folks within Toastmasters International to say, all right, what are we going to do to get a woman to win and make it a big deal and get, you know, clubs to really compete and push women? It's not a way to push men down, but it's a way to say, hey, women have a voice too. So I think it's important for us to own our voices, put our voices out there, and be bold and diverse with our voices with no apologies.
By the way, before we go on, I just want to recognize Mike Nye, who I'll ask to comment at the end. He's a fellow Toastmaster who is also an unbelievable dancer who I met at the convention. So hold your thoughts, Mike. I promise I'll bring you in on the end, okay? Kathy or Angela, and or Angela, thoughts about who can champion? It should be men, women, both. What's your thoughts on it?
Angela?
I agree. I think that it really needs to be both. As I mentioned, there are differences in all of us. So we want to really champion that at all levels of Toastmasters and celebrate that. And by doing that and bringing everyone in and being inclusive, I think we learn so much more. So that's really great. And having been a member of so many different clubs across my Toastmasters career, the best ones are always the people, those that are willing to bring in people and really welcome their differences. Mm-hmm. And I think when you start with that and acknowledging that the person who is speaking or who may even be competing, helping them celebrate those differences and not pushing them into a formula for winning, mm-hmm. but really being celebrating their authenticity. Mm-hmm.
I would agree.
Michelle, I had a really good friend last year. He's a guy, Toastmaster here in Portland, Oregon. He ended up getting a TED Talk at TEDx Zurich Women. So it was crazy. Actually, he was speaking on women leaders and why more women should be leaders. And he had this really good quote. I thought I'd share it with you. I thought it was beautiful. It was a great catchphrase in his talk. He said, let's stop trying to align women to a broken world and instead fix our world by aligning it with the wisdom of women. So his entire talk was about that. So I think sometimes the anti-example, it can help a lot. Like if you have a man really championing a woman, and his entire talk was about the wisdom from women in his life that he had learned from. So I think sometimes it can be really, really powerful. But I agree that we should all be focusing on getting more women to compete.
Yeah. Well, because what I was going to say to me too, it's also helping each woman understand that her voice, and I think Marquesa, you brought this up, her voice is important and her story is important, and to really trust deeply within herself that her ability to, you know, bring those words out and communicate them effectively. I think that I have gotten strong input from men And I personally don't know, other than I'll say right out, Penelope is a big champion for me, but I've gotten more from the men. So I'd like to be the one that tries to help champion women going further. So I think we still got a lot of work on all of that. Let's talk a little bit about what we saw last, what we see. Like, I know Kathy, you've done the TED Talks. Marquesa, you coach a lot of people. You saw the convention speaking, Angela. What do you think women need, whether on the local level or to get all the way to the end, to be the world champion? What do you think she needs? I'm going to start with a couple of questions. Does she need an amazing personal story? I mean, is it one that's like, oh, lots of drama in it? Like, is your personal story still something you got to bring on strong, or is it more of a world story, do you think? Like, this is what I see of the world. Marquesa, let me put that to you first, if you don't mind.
I think a little bit of both, and I'm explaining that. I think a woman needs to sit down and ask herself, what is it that I want to share with the world? It could be a perspective. It could be an experience. It could be something I'm pissed off about, whatever it is. I think we need to be, and I think that's why TED Talks are so popular, because it's not the typical speech. It's all about an opinion, an expression, a perspective. And I think we need to sit down and be willing to share whatever that is. It could be, you know what, I like the fact that I stay home, and this is not my perspective, but I like the fact that I stay home and raise my kids and nothing else. Or I like the fact that I'm single and I'm celebrating it. It's not a horrible thing. If I never get married, that is okay. Whatever that perspective is, be willing to get out there and share it. So don't put yourself in the hole. Because I think sometimes when we say story, which is a very big deal thing, I definitely train people on their story. Oftentimes we tell ourselves, well, what sad story do I have to tell? I don't really think I have anything. And if you've been living on this earth long enough, you have a story. We just got to figure out how to put it out there. And again, thinking about perspective, opinion, whatever that may be. And I think with the current environment, including the political one, which we won't get into tonight, there are so many different ways we can share who we are and put our voice out there. And diversity, I think, is the bigger word. Yes. And let's see something different out there. And I think we'll get attention and we'll stand out, and the men will not overshadow. I think we got to enter it from a different perspective, if that makes sense.
That actually makes a lot of sense. I love that I enter it from a different, not more of a like women, but more just kind of coming in and saying, no, here we are, and I've got something to say. And so a different perspective. Yeah. Kathy, what's your take on, do we need, you know, this personal amazing story? Like, I got to have, you know, the biggest drama going on, or.
Well, I got to take it from where Marquesa did it. It's awesome, because she really touched on a couple of things. One of the things that's really important with a TED Talk, for instance, is that you have a really good idea, and that you also share it from a very different perspective. You know, as a marketer as well, obviously people are drawn to things that are exceptional or things that are different. We're like, our brains are actually wired to like look for the differences. And so when we see that, when we see somebody speaking, if they're kind of just doing what everybody else is doing, it's not going to stand out. So I think women need to take that, you know, kind of take that responsibility on a little bit, is to, you know, really not only dig for a good story, because I know we're all actually guilty of this, men and women. We have stories in our life and we think they're amazing, or we think that we're awesome, and we don't take the time to really put it in a light or a perspective or an angle that would be really interesting to everybody in general. We've all seen this at Toastmasters, where somebody's interested in sailing and then every single one of their speeches is about sailing, or they like soccer and every single speech is about soccer. So it's not necessarily what you talk about, it's the way that you present it, and you have to be diligent. And again, I'll go back to my quote, like, for the women, we have to be so good at what we do that it doesn't matter what gender we are.
I love that. So, Yeah. And Angela, you have any thoughts on that in terms of like the story? I mean, I keep using the drama, you know, do we need to have that level of drama? Or do you think, like, you can go on that idea, you have to be so good at what you do, it doesn't matter what your gender is?
I really think it's about the message that they want to take. And some of the people that I've worked with in the past is they've tried to get ready for their competition and figuring out what is it that I'm going to take and what's my message. Really starting with, what's that message? What's the story? And I always say, what's the different twist on that? How, what's the different take? What's, most people know, some people know about me that I'm a figure skater. Well, great. Okay. So we know you go to the rink and we know you probably compete and you probably won something. But there's all sorts of different things that people would never think about, all the problems that people would never even think about and what that would be. So helping a speaker find that and figure out what that is and why the audience would find that important and making that piece memorable. I think that's really the key there.
Well, let's start. You actually lead into that really well, because I know you are a skater. So coming onto stage with your ice skates, let's say, we saw the ultimate prop this year. The ultimate prop was the white underwear over his black pencil suit. And he actually did an excellent job. I mean, the whole audience was like, whew. But he actually did an excellent job incorporating the prop into the speech. But I have to say, the minute he came out and put that underwear on, the person next to me said, he's going to win this. So what is the prop still the thing that's going to get us to the finish line? Let's see. Angela, let me put that back to you, because I know I was thinking of you and the skates and all this. I mean, he did it incredibly well as a world champion. But is the prop something we just have to have?
I don't think so. And I think the reason why this gentleman was so successful with that prop was that, one, it just took everybody off guard. So people were giggling at the beginning. He drew them in with that one prop, but then his story was very focused on that prop and why it was important. And of course, there was the back of, you know, everybody's mind thinking, is he going to take them off or is he going to do the whole speech with them on? Right. I think if that illustrates having the right prop and having the right timing with the right prop. Mm-hmm. I've seen people use props and they bring them and it's almost like if you took the prop away, you would never know. They have the same talk whether the prop is there or not. And I think the best part of having a prop is being able to integrate it well so that if you didn't have the prop, part of your speech is missing and it doesn't quite make as much sense and it doesn't have the same impact. Mm-hmm. So I think that's from a perspective of, I wouldn't say that everyone needs a prop, but there's an appropriate place for one.
Marquessa, comments, thoughts on props when it comes to the competing?
You know what? I would say, depending on what your topic is going to be or what it is you want the audience to walk away with or feel when you're up there speaking, what could you use to enhance that or take that to the next level? So for example, maybe at one point in your life, you were a beauty queen and maybe that was your identity and you needed to sort of move on from it. It was tough. Or maybe a great prop would be a tiara or, you know, for me going through weight loss right now, maybe my prop may be, you know, one of my big, huge pairs of pants. So I think it depends on your story. I think it can help you. But if it's not a prop, it could be an outfit. It could be, you know, and I know certain things are allowed in Toastmaster competitions. It could be just about anything. I've seen it all. I've seen it all. Yeah. So I think what's important is to not do what everybody else does. Mm-hmm. You know, so if a person won with a prop, you better believe everybody else is, I got to go find a prop. Yeah. And I think that's the wrong direction to go in. I think you've got to say, what is it? It could be a character. I know as a person with a background in acting, you know, that's my secret sauce. You know, so instead of me using a prop, I'll become a character instead. So find your secret sauce, whatever that is for you.
I like that. Find your secret sauce. Yeah. Kathy.
I love that.
Well, I know, find your secret sauce. Props, I know we saw Darren did a great job with the chairs. You know, so Darren LaCroix did his speech where he had two small chairs where he was sitting in one as if he was talking to his younger self in the other chair. So that's another example of props. Kathy, what your take on props?
Well, so when I coach people, one of the things I teach is that we should always have powerful visuals. Science proves it beyond a doubt that people actually digest things and take things in more when there's a powerful visual. Now, what constitutes a powerful visual? Because in my opinion, there's no such thing as a neutral visual. You're either adding value or you're taking value away. So, you know, like Angela and Marquessa said, there's definitely people you know, propping, if you will, just to have a prop. And that's not adding value. Now, one of the best TED Talks I've ever seen in my entire life, the most powerful visual I've ever seen, is a TED Talk by Sarah Kay. She's a spoken word poet, and she did the entire talk in a spoken word poem, and it's called If I Should Have a Daughter. And when she did that poem part, the entire time she was choreographing with her hands what she was saying, it was the most eloquent, beautiful thing ever. And there was no actual prop like a shoe or, you know, a tiara or, you know, underwear. It just was her. So I think, you know, Marquesa kind of nailed it right. When there has to be an appropriate visual, but visuals will always, always trump no visuals. Always. They will, but they have to be appropriate. And, you know, I think Marquesa was also the one that said, even if you do a character, it's a visual. So we have to think, I think, of props in a different way, not just something that's just cliche, like let's hold something, let's have something. How can we be more visual when we talk? How can we get people's brains to make the connections faster and more powerful and more emotional? And that's what I think.
Good. That actually brings me, with the way you discussed that, brings me to what I'll call body gestures, body language. One of the things I also saw that the men were doing in this particular, that sort of drove this whole idea, was that they were so big on stage. I mean, big arm gestures, throwing things on the, like, just very big gestures, very loud voices. And I thought, wow, like, they took up so much space on the stage. Are we as women confident enough to take up the space on stage? And how would you even coach someone? I mean, I would say, you know, do big arm gestures, but how does that really come across unless she's got the full confidence of yes, I know exactly, I'm very confident up here. So is it the big body language, do you think? And let me go back to Marquesa again when it comes to, you know, you take on characters, do they need to be big to take up? Let me just pull myself in, because this is definitely my topic, and let me just say this. I was just amazed at how much space the men took up. That's all. Marquesa?
Well, if you're going to be on a big stage, use it. You know, move around. I do think it's important to not be so choreographed that you lose the authenticity of your presentation. But I do think, you know, we do need to move around. And I love to do that. Whether I'm in a small space or a big space, I want to go stage left. I want to go stage right. I want to go upstage, downstage. I like to move around. And I think when I move, it allows me to almost segue to a different part of the presentation. So I do think it's important to move. But again, I'm going to go back to, a lot of it depends on what is my presentation doing? What is my speech doing? Am I, you know, like you mentioned, Dara LaCroix, am I showing my now self versus my younger self? Then two sides of the stage would be appropriate. Am I showing my single self versus my married self or whatever? So it depends on how many layers there are in your presentation. You can actually, the stage almost becomes your prop, you know? Yeah, it can become your prop and you can use it. Or, and this is what makes me think of Broadway, you know, our world out here in New York City is, you can use a part of a stage to take you into another part of your presentation. So when I'm there, I'm in a different part of it. You know, maybe I'm in the young part, maybe I'm in the older part, maybe I'm dancing or whatever that may be. So I think the stage can certainly be used as a big part of your presentation. Great. Yeah.
Angela, thoughts about, you know, I know you're also a very physical, all three of you I know are very physical in your own ways, but thoughts about being large as a woman on stage and body gestures?
I think that it's something that women have to get comfortable with off stage. And because of what I do as a career with project management and going into companies and watching people's body language in conference rooms, and I've noticed, it was kind of pointed out to me early in my career, the differences between men and women, and I noticed them and they've been sort of reinforced, is that men naturally take up the amount of space they need when they sit at the table. They take up all the space that they need. I think even Sheryl Sandberg might have mentioned this in one of her writings. And women take up as little space because culturally women have been told, you know, we want to make everybody happy and we got to make room for everyone. And So getting comfortable in just regular life of taking up the space that you need, or maybe taking up a little bit more space because you need a little more space right now to express yourself. And then taking that to the stage so that it appears it's that authenticity that comes out rather than it's choreographed that my coach said, lift arms here. Mm-hmm. Okay, now put arms down and walk. Then it just feels something very natural because they're very used to the movements. Yeah. And I think that's one of the differences that I still see in my professional career and in my speaking. I've noticed that in Toastmasters, I still see some of those as being significant differences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Mike, hang on. I promise at one point I'll bring you in for all your feedback on this. But Angela, you bring up a very good point about, you know, men sitting on the subway, they're just kind of like taking up space. And like, Kathy, I know when you're coaching people, is it challenging for women to take up more space? What's your experience?
I was just cracking up about this when everybody's talking. We're all saying the same thing, because you have to be you 100% no matter what. And if you're not being you, people know when you're not being you. So I hate going back to the TED because it's very different than Toastmasters, but I have to say this about TED Talks. It's really funny. In TED, they force you to stand on a red dot. You're forced to stand in one little spot. You're forced to give this conversational talk. They don't even call it a speech. They call it a talk because they want it to be very conversational. But yeah, if you actually watch TED Talks, even though there's not a lot of like large gestures or body language, you can 100% see how somebody is. You'll know exactly what kind of person they are just by the way that they're talking. I mean, when I did my TED Talk, I did do some gestures that were kind of out of the norm, but it's me, and you have to be you. So I think that it is sometimes just, and you have to push yourself a little bit sometimes. I mean, if you're used to being this kind of, you know, quiet, reserved, person that doesn't have a loud voice, doesn't have a lot of, you know, you don't have anything bold, you're going to have to work at it. I mean, that would be your job. You're going to have, and not to be inauthentic, but you're going to have something that will stand out, or you won't make it. I mean, you won't make it in the Toastmasters contest. You won't make it in the real world. You just won't. So, you have to find that balance between being you 100% and, being able to stand out.
Yeah. You know, you also bring up a very good point, and I'm not going to call out ages or anything. Is there also a generational issue when it comes to competing? And what I mean by that is someone who's a 20 or 30 year old in the club versus a 60 plus year old in the club. Are we seeing some generational challenges as well? Is the 20 to 30 year old really ready to go, I'm just going to talk and I don't care what anybody thinks, versus the, you know, 60 plus year old who says, you know, I have to be kind of like this. Now, again, I'm doing a little bit of stereotypes, but any thoughts on that?
I have a perfect story for that.
Go ahead.
When I was coaching Ryan Avery, I'll never forget this, youngest, you know, person ever win the Toastmasters. Part of when I was coaching him, and just at the point when he had won district, he pulled me off to the side. He goes, Kathy, don't tell anybody this right now. I'm going to be the first person in the world to stand on the world stage, and I'm going to actually use media because it's so much part of my generation. And I'm going to have, and I don't care what anybody says. Now, after Randy Harvey got a hold of him, he didn't end up doing it. So there was a piece of him that really wanted to and didn't care. It was like, I'm going to do it. Like, that's part of what I do. And, you know, it's part of my generation. But I think sometimes he was a great example of somebody who wanted to do something a little bit different, but then realized that there's a balance in there. You know, a lot of the older Toastmasters, I noticed, judge differently. They'll judge you more based on what you're wearing. Are you dressed up really nice? If you're not, they will kind of count you down, as opposed to, was it a really good message? Was it a really good speech? Did it deliver value? They'll cut you down for some. And then, you know, a younger person wouldn't care about that. A younger person wouldn't care at all. In fact, a younger person would probably count you down if you're wearing a suit. So you just got to kind of know your audience, right? You got to kind of you got to be you. That's why I'm always like, you just got to be you and whatever. Everybody else, you know, everything else will kind of fill in.
Yeah. Marquesa, generational. Kathy, that was great though, too. Any other thoughts on generational, Marquesa? Because I know you work with a lot of age ranges as well.
Absolutely. And when I would speak all over the country back in my seminar company days, one of the things that was a part of my course were the generations. So this was always an audience favorite. In terms of competing when it comes to generations, I think it's important to, you know, make sure you celebrate whatever that generation you are, if it relates to your presentations, not just because. There's no offense. There's some generations out there that will say, well, I'm millennial and I need to do something young. So I need to wear the right outfit. I need to have some kind of technology. And then my question is, does this relate to what you're talking about? Mm-hmm. And also remember, it's all about who's in your audience. You know, I've seen people on lots of stages that will come with their whole agenda, but they forget that they're there to serve the audience. They're there to take the audience on a journey. So make sure all the parts fit together. And if they fit together, yeah, the millennial generation celebrated by wearing a certain type of outfit or using color more or moving around or just getting crazy or doing something outrageous or flipping around or something like that. Maybe my generation, Generation X, we also love technology. Maybe we want to maybe a little bit more sassier. Maybe we're quick with the way we speak. So what I do think is important in order to stand out, for you to find something that makes you stand out from everybody else's, especially when it comes to competition. Mm-hmm. So whether that's your generation, whether it's the way you look, whether it's the way you talk, whether it's the way you move, whether it's the way you the different personalities that come out, you know, on stage. I think that that's when it comes, you know, if I'm coaching someone, I would say, let's see what's special about you, going back to that secret sauce I said. And if the generation is special about you, as long as it meets the purpose of your presentation, you know, I know Marjorie Brody, the writer of, you know, she's a CSP, CPAE, which is a Hall of Fame speaker. And I recently interviewed her for Speaker Magazine. And Brody, oh my gosh, talk about someone who... And I'm trying to remember, I'm losing my train of thought, but she, what was I talking, oh, generations. I remember her being so clear about, you're speaking too fast, I need you to slow down, you're talking to an audience of corporate, they don't care about all that. I need you to meet, oh, I know what it was, in her book, she talks about PAL, purpose, audience, logistics, purpose, audience, logistics. If you miss the purpose, just because you want to show your little generation off, you're going to miss the audience. You're going to lose the competition. So what's your PAL is what I would end with. What's your PAL?
Purpose, audience, logistics.
Purpose, audience, logistics. Yeah. And that, and then the rest of that is putting together that presentation, you know, that opening, how are you going to get them when you first come out, the body of it, how you're going to connect and tell the story, the closing, what are you going to leave them with? But all around that is, what's my purpose? You know, am I here to inform? Am I here to entertain? Am I, what's the purpose of it? You know, and who are you talking to? So I think you need to consider all of that and not just, well, I'm young and hip and I want everybody to know it. So I appreciate the generation, but put it in the right order if you want to win. Just saying, if you want to win.
Well, of course, I love all your movement, girl. I mean, I can feel you. I can feel your message. Angela, I'd love to hear any thoughts you have also about generation, especially I've seen Tom Davidson from the chapter also do his generational talk. So I don't know, any thoughts or comments for you for regarding generation with what we're doing with competition?
From a Toastmasters perspective, something that I've seen in recent years, and I always find this interesting, I love watching this, is having an evaluator who is of a different generation than the speaker. And then talking with the speaker afterwards, and they're a little bit confused as to why that person saw them that way. And it gets kind of funny, and I've always, the people that I've mentored, I've always said, remember, they may not even be your target audience, but it's nice to know what someone else's take is on that, because they're bringing in a whole different background, mm-hmm. and viewing through that lens the talk that you're giving. And there are things that maybe you can take from that would help you if you suddenly showed up at a place and you thought you were speaking to one group and it turns out you're speaking to another. You learn to be able to shift gears. Yeah. I think that's one of the most interesting things to work through in Toastmasters, so that people don't get discouraged. kind of a tricky thing, because I've seen some folks who are actually on the younger side. I won't mention any generations, but they come in and like, I'm getting these really horrible evaluations, or I don't understand this, and so this is probably not working for me. And I always say, take what you can from it and use that where you can.
Yeah.
And keeping people really motivated beyond that.
You know, that is a very interesting, this whole thing about generations, which each of you have brought in a piece about it, that really when we're delivering, even in a competition, we have to almost keep in mind that we could be having, at this point, it's an exciting time in Toastmasters to say, all generations. So you have to, while you have to be yourself, you also have to be respectful of all those generations, in a sense, to be the, what we saw, let me just say this, even about the clothing, because one of the interesting things this year that I thought was a big shift in the competition was, I would say, and correct me if I'm wrong, Kathy, Angela, most everyone was in black, which I have never seen so much black on stage, black clothing. I've never seen so much. So there's a slight, it seems like there's even a slight shift on the clothing that was, even though it was professional business suits or dresses or, you know, suits for men, it was primarily black. Kathy, any thoughts on, like, that was a shock, that was a surprise to me.
I am the wrong person to ask, because I wear black all the time. Like, I'm wearing black now. I have black jeans. Marquesa was saying, don't wear some red lipstick, you know? Like, I mean, that's so bad.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's really funny. You're now talking across, you're now even talking beyond, now if you actually get into the fashion piece of it, beyond the generation. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, people in marketing, you go to a marketing conference, everybody's in black. And so I think in the end, in TED Talks, you'll never see anybody wearing a suit in a TED. It's totally opposite in the TED world. They're like, show up in your jeans. In fact, Chris Anderson talks in his book, and you'll hear him. He says, if he catches anybody wearing a tie, he'll come onto the stage and actually cut it. He'll cut it off of them. So I think it just depends. I mean, there was a lot of black. It doesn't bother me. I'm used to seeing it, so it would never have stood out to me, but maybe to somebody else like you, it stands out.
And I look at Angela, Marquesa, and Kathy, and myself are all in some form of black. So, hey, whatever.
Right.
Did you?
I know. 100% black right here. I don't know. My shoes are black. My nails are black. I mean,
now, I've started to play with color. I will say that. I just happen to have on a black today, but I have started to get outside myself and experiment a little bit more. And I was one of those speakers. Oh, I got to wear black so I can look slimmer, or, you know, have the sexy look. And then what I would see is, once I watched my video, I would see myself invisible because the stage is so dark. So I'm learning to wear color on stage. And I like when people play with color, but I think it helps if you have some idea of how the stage is going to look. I really do.
I agree with that one. Yes. Angela, were you surprised at all this summer when we saw, you know, the all mostly in black, all 10 contestants?
I was, and my first thought was, holy cow, if this is the future of speaking, I am so totally out of this, because I don't own anything plain. The leopard print you're seeing is probably the plainest thing I own. So I am not the example of what to wear on stage. But I was fascinated by that it seemed... I don't know. It seemed sort of reminiscent that there was like a speaker uniform that everybody had put on, like, and maybe that was a really good thing, because then maybe their speaking stood out rather than the clothing. Yeah. Although the white underpants, I mean, they stood out no matter what. That was the point. But you know, for me, what to wear on stage is always challenging, because no matter what I do, someone in my audience is going to be offended. So I'm not the one to look for to be the fashion expert for speaking.
Angela, I would disagree with that, Angela, because like what you're wearing, I think it looks fantastic on you. And I'm the kind of person, if I wear that, I'll look at it later and go, I just can't feel comfortable in it. And in the end, I've listened to people talk, and I'll look at their outfit at first and I'll go, you know, I'll be like, oh my gosh, this is a terrible outfit. But as soon as they get me like on their content, I'm done. I don't care what they're wearing. I don't care if they're invisible in their background. I don't care if they have a raspy voice. I literally don't care about any of that if their content's good. And in the, you know, we know this in the professional speaking world. We don't get paid to show up for, you know, to stand out on a stage or whatever. We get paid for good content that will change people's mind and change the way people ask, think, feel, do, you know. So that's my final take on that. I like your leopard print on you. It looks fantastic. I can't swing it. It looks great on you.
Also, I think it plays a role even outside of color, or with color rather, your brand. What is that brand you're trying to put out? I have friends that wear a lot of red or a lot of silver. I got to bling it up. Or, you know, I think of Larry Winget, and I think of, you know, some of these folks, you know, it's not necessarily about color for him, but it's about, I want to look as crazy and out there and like a cowboy as I can. So I think the brand that you want to put out there. You know, how can I leverage this thing? That's the thing. I admire people. One of my good friends, this is his fourth time competing. I don't know if you guys know James Jeffley. It was his fourth time competing, and he didn't make it to the finals this round, but he did last year. And I like when someone leverages that competition, because even if you don't win first place, people will remember you, hire you to come speak for their organizations. It's amazing what will happen. So you got to think outside of just the competition, but think of, I want to be remembered, and I want, if I'm going to be on a big Toastmasters international stage, I want to get phone calls for years to come because they remembered me for some reason. So color can be to your advantage if you think about how you're going to leverage that time, that moment when all the eyes are on you.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's do one last question before we open up for Q&A and hear a little feedback from Mike Nye, who's my colleague, as I said, my dance partner from the convention. What is one tip you would offer that you believe would help a woman win? Right. What's one tip that you believe? Angela, can I put you on the spot and ask you?
I'm going to start with my pet peeve. I'll go with this, and it's to really be authentic, not to be coached to authenticity. I think that speakers tend to lose that at some point. I don't know if everyone goes through it, but I've worked with a number of people where things start to feel scripted and forced. I've been through it. And to really stay true to that. No matter all of the advice and the direction, keeping that point and staying true to it.
Stay authentic, not to be coached to authenticity. Yeah, I love it. Great. Kathy?
Everybody has advantages and disadvantages in life. It's just the way it is. In some scenarios, you may have an advantage because you are a woman. In another scenario, you may have an advantage because you're young, or maybe you're older. You always have advantages. And I think one of the things that you should do in every scenario is take an inventory of what your advantages and your disadvantages are. And you need to capitalize on your strengths and downplay your weaknesses, whatever they are. And it may just be another way to stay authentic, but that's how I play sports. You know, I play soccer. I'm really good at running fast. I suck at ball handling skills. So I'm not going to try to like mess around with the ball. I'm going to try to run. So it's in speaking. You got to do the same thing. You got to find out what's your advantage and you got to capitalize on that. And definitely downplay what's not going to make you look good.
Okay, so take inventory, capitalize on your strengths. I like to say manage your weaknesses or downplay the weaknesses.
Yeah.
Super. And Marquesa?
Rochelle knows this. I can be very competitive. Ooh, and that's shocking. But and it's okay. I'm loving the elections right now. Some of my friends are cringing every single night. But I'm loving it. One thing I would say is if you truly want to win and you want to stand out and you want to be able to leverage this, as I said before, go within and ask yourself, God, what am I going through that I need to talk about? You know, what is it that's happening in here? You know, maybe some traumatic experience I went through or something I've been wanting to get off my chest and share with the world. I think that's what, you know, you think of singers like Taylor Swift. Now, I have never in my life bought a Taylor Swift album. But I know who she is, and I know what she's known for. And she's known in large part because she writes, she tells her story, whatever she's going through at that moment, she writes about it and the world loves it. So we can kind of take a note from the songwriters out there and really, and you mentioned, Angela, about being authentic. I think part of being authentic is being willing to put yourself out there. I think of James Jeffley, who's been killing it. I mean, he goes there, he's like a little celebrity around Toastmasters International. And every year, James talks about something that's happening. He recently went through a divorce. He talked about that, you know. It was hard for him to, he's been married all these years. Now he's alone in the world, and this was tough for him. How do I deal with that? How do I, you know, now all of a sudden I'm not a husband. Oh my goodness. And the pain that went through. So be willing to be vulnerable, frankly, you know, good girlfriend, you know, that a lot of us know in NSA, she put out to the world, I got herpes. I ain't ashamed of it. You know, whatever that story is, be willing to put it out there, even if it's shocking to people, because you'll get so much respect. And I think as women, if we want to stand out and we're tired of the men winning, be willing to just look inside yourself and say, darn it, I don't know where this is coming from, but I got to be willing to tell my story. I got to put it out there. Whether it's your story, your perspective, whatever, look inside and share it.
Perfect. Look inside and share it. So that's going to bring me to our Mike Nye, who's our man of the hour. Mike, your thoughts, comments with from the male perspective of this evening's Speak Up.
All right, thank you so much, Rochelle. First of all, I really appreciate that your courage to raise this topic, have a panel speaking about how to win from the women's perspective. It's very, I think, courageous, and it's insightful. I really applaud for your vision on that. And secondly, I studied all the past 10 years public speaking winning speeches because I coached the youth, the children for public speaking for the past 5 years. I analyze and play every speech they have won. Especially the 2008 LaShonda Rondos, right?
My girl.
I know. I cried because her story is just one of a kind. So we need to, as I think you people said, be authentic, right? Take advantage or your strength, sometimes your uniqueness is all important. But from a man's perspective, I probably can add one thing, Rochelle and Angela, Kathy, and Markia, is try to find the content more universally compelling. The reason I'm saying that is we only know what we know. We don't know what we don't know, right? So when you design a content, you have your comfort zone. You pick things. For instance, the number 3, Josephine Lee, I'll be there. Remember the speech? Yes. Mainly is a girl story. It's very compelling to girls, but maybe only part of the audience can click. But for the bully story, it can apply to everybody. The Darren Tay. So try to think of content or pick up topic which is more universally compelling and raising rapport from every angle of the audience. That's my suggestion. Other than that, I don't have anything else.
Mike, you actually, that was a very, I appreciate what you said, because yes, she talked about her girl story. And you're right, you almost cut, you could, unless you can tie it over to your audience, you could lose, you know, half your audience maybe or something. Yeah. So that's really interesting. That's a great perspective, and I really appreciate you bringing that to the call tonight. Thank you. And thank you for being our male representation tonight. I deeply appreciate it. So let's see, Penelope, Elaine, Anna, anyone have any questions they'd like to ask? I'm going to just unmute so that we've got to get you all on here. If the noise gets too loud, then I'll go ahead and mute you out. But is there anyone who'd like questions or comments, thoughts, takeaways? Penelope, since you were one of the, you know, you were part of the, you were my impetus for this whole let's do this. What are your thoughts or comments or takeaways from this evening? Stephanie, go ahead.
No, it was fascinating. I loved the throwback to the fashion discussion also, because at the previous call, Lisa Panarello talked about having worn her white suit to compete in, and how stunning and memorable, and how many people remembered that. And one thing I love about looking back at the district conference was my blue out of the sea of black. But I think it's really helpful to hear and have specific goals that women can try for in moving forward to compete. These takeaways tonight, I think, are excellent.
Great. Elaine, any thoughts or comments?
Well, I was thinking about the winner and him putting on the underwear over his suit. And I start thinking, what would be the reaction if a woman did that? I'm looking and saying it probably wouldn't work, because there is a kind of a sexual context there. So it, I don't know why I'm on that point, but just saying that I guess we do have to be very careful about the things that we do. We could not do that.
Exactly. Yeah. You bring up a really, really good point. You know, thank you. You're absolutely correct. I couldn't even argue with that one, that you'd have to really think that through, that if you took the same case of the white underwear on his black suit and I put it, you know, all three of us put on a white underwear tonight, it would not be going over the same way. That's for sure.
You know what I could do? I could wear a Wonder Woman costume.
Yeah, okay.
God couldn't rock that.
That's true.
Yeah. Now, I know Anna looks like we're on the subway with her going home in New York. So, Anna, I just want to say thank you for joining us. And whoever's on my 347 line, thanks so much for joining. I know we had Dorothy on here earlier. Kathy, closing thoughts, comments?
I want to reiterate everybody's sentiment of thank you. This is a great topic. Things don't change until you bring them to the surface and talk about them. Being self-aware is one of the best things that you can be in your life, regardless if you're a man or a woman. So I would definitely just say that would be kind of my closing comment, wrapping everything that we talked about, is be very self-aware. Be self-aware of your advantages, your disadvantages, your story, your universal themes to the world, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, what audience you're talking to, what you should wear. I mean, just be very self-aware. I think being self-aware is the best way to go.
Perfect. Thanks. Angela?
I'll make mine short and sweet, and I will just leave it with, I think for me, the theme is always knowing your audience and knowing how they could perceive you and what you're presenting, whether you're a man or a woman. And sometimes because of your sex, things could be perceived differently. So that's something that's really important. And I try to take that with me every time I stand up and present.
Thank you. Marquesa?
One thing I would say is life is so short and so precious. We mentioned LaShonda Rundles. You know, she died of a terrible disease. I remember visiting her in a hospital in Dallas. And, you know, that girl was a fighter. And she just leveraged her life and made the most out of it. And I think when you make a decision, I'm going to compete and I'm going to put myself out there and I'm going to give my best, that you need to have that LaShonda Rundles mindset of, I don't care if I don't, you know, I don't care if I fail, I'll just do it again. I don't care if someone doesn't think I'm good enough or whatever. I want to get out there and be the best me and have fun, because that's what life is about. I think about James Jeffley, who this was his third or fourth year competing. I mean, he's in the California district, California. That's where he competes. And he makes it through all the clubs. And this guy has been a member of Toastmasters for 1 year. 1 year. And every year he makes it all the way up to the international conference to compete. Mm-hmm. And he does it year after year. And yet again, he did not win in DC. And guess what he's going to do? He's going to do it all over again the next year. So if you really want to win, take the LaShonda side of the brain that goes, I'm enough and I can do this because this is my life. Mm-hmm. And I only got one shot. I don't know if tomorrow isn't promised. And then take the James Jeffley side of your brain and say, hey, I'm ready for it. I'm going to be my best. And if I don't win this one, I'll win next year.
Well, listen, I hope each and every one of us on the call can champion a woman this year in one of the district conferences to get rolling. I want to personally thank Kathy, Angela, and Marquesa for champion for me tonight in this high performance leadership. Also, thank you to Mike and Penelope, Elaine, Anna. Thank you all for being part of this as I move forward in leadership and working towards my DTM. So that, but most importantly, if we can champion women going forward, it'll be a lot of fun to see not only on our local district level, but what it'll look like next year at the international convention. So I thank you all so very much and have a great evening. Thanks for being with me. Good night.
Thank you all. Thank you.
Good job, Rochelle.
Good night.
Thanks. Bye, guys. Bye-bye.